Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Full Ride here on the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm joined, as I am all the time, on this ferry ride that is full, Matt Green, fellow University of North Georgia alumni. Matt Green, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is an excellent evening to be talking college football like we love to do on this podcast.
It's good, man. How has it been? Like, you've had a couple nights to reflect on Georgia semifinal win. You're not going to believe this, Matt Green. You're not going to believe this. You and I, we talked about this ad nauseum, that these games are not good. And I saw a stat like 20 of 23 college football playoff wins have come from four teams: Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama. And these were both, I watched all of them, and man, happy for you, happy for a lot of my family who are Georgia fans, but man, these two games, if you're a college football fan, or if you're a college football czar, you're not happy, I would say, by all this. But as a Georgia fan, because you still have one more to go, and because you still have Bama looming, were you able to really enjoy it? And what was the situation like at the Green household?
Oh, absolutely. We were able to enjoy it. I think this game for Georgia, well, before we get into Georgia, I want to back to the first things you said, just in terms of the college football playoff. Like, where are you coming from? Are you coming from a person who wants more teams? Or are you? I feel like I've heard so many people, like on Twitter the last couple of days, like college football people, like prominent people, talking about, oh, maybe we need to go back to the BCS. Like, maybe the playoff is just a terrible idea. Like, we're getting bad playoff games. How is the solution more playoff games? You know, and I kind of do understand that point. Except for, I think, you know, if four is not having to play Alabama, they're playing number five, that's probably going to be a good game, right? So I don't necessarily agree that we're just going to get more blowouts if we expand it. But but the biggest thing is, like, I don't understand how people can be talking about the BCS, because, like, this is eight playoffs now. Three of them ended in number one versus number two. So that's five of the eight where the BCS would not have put these two teams together. So, like, that the most important part of the 14 playoff is that you're getting a more legitimate one versus number two, which I think is important. And I think before people, because I struggle with the expansion because the college football regular season is so good. Like, you're worried about Alabama dominating. It's like, well, if you do an 18 playoff, Alabama's getting in literally every year. They basically get in every year now. Like, their bad seasons are two losses. Like, they're absolutely awful seasons, I should say, or two losses. So, like, that's not really a solution. So I don't want, like, this current era of Bama dominance to kind of cloud people's judgment that, like, this is absurd. If we would have put this four-team playoff model in 20 years ago, we would have still had this absurd Bama run that's like just unprecedented. You know what I mean? It's like if the NCAA tournament happened, went to 64 teams, like as soon as UCLA's dynasty with John Wooden happened. You know what I mean? It's like, well, clearly this format is terrible because this team wins every year. You know what I mean? So I think to some extent, people are prisoners of the moment. Like, we're not going to see another team dominate college football the way Alabama is currently doing it for this 10 plus year period. You know, so I think, like you talked about, that there's 23 games so far, and four teams have won 20 of those games. It's like Alabama has won 9 of those 20, you know? Yeah. So Clemson has 6 of those, and then Ohio State with 3 and Georgia with 2. So like, Clemson's definitely doing some heavy lifting, but Alabama is half of those wins from those, like that power four, if you want to call it that. But like, so I feel like just people don't know what to do with this Alabama dominance. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why they're just so like, they want to, you know, tiger proof college football or something. And I don't really think there's a way to do it because this is a dominant program. And until Nick Saban is gone and they, you know, maybe make a bad hire down the road, who knows if like there'll be a normal SEC team again, but right now they're just this juggernaut. So I don't know if there's anything we can really do to legislate the fairness of college football. And I think if you get too many teams in there, I worry, you know, the Iron Bowl, when both teams make the college football playoff, like how interesting is that? You know, the cocktail party, both teams make the playoff, and you know, it doesn't have the same, you know, just finality like that every like important college football regular season game has, which is something that's just so unique to college football. But in terms of getting back to Georgia and just,
well, I was going to say, you asked me about the playoff. Yeah, go ahead, asked me about the playoff aspect of it, which is that, like, okay. One of the things about expansion that I've always said, like, Andy Staples makes a really good point about this, which is, like, he's not arguing, and a lot of the proponents for expansion of the college football playoff are not arguing that it's going to create more parity. They're just saying it gets more teams a bite at the apple and an opportunity to say we made the playoff and get more people at least in, like playing late in the year. More fan bases are like, hey, we can make the playoffs. Like, that is just a cool thing to be chasing the playoffs. Like, if you're a Wake Forest or whatever, you know, you can't run the gauntlet, but that's not how the average fan thinks. They're just like, that would be cool. Like, we're not living in the moment. Like, we're not under the facade that like we can run through a Clemson, Bama, Ohio State gauntlet. Like, we're not under that
right.
false
I think
illusion.
One thing that college basketball has going for it.
Right.
A guy can hang around 15, 20 years without winning a national championship because he's been to 3 Final Fours. He has some tangible accomplishments to hold on to.
Yeah, I agree. But that's what, and I think if you're making that case, I agree with that case. I think the cat's out of the bag now, and I think that's probably a broader conversation even before we get into Georgia, Michigan, is that like bowl season is in trouble. And this is, I mean, you see Kirk and Desmond talking about this a lot, but I think a lot of people on Twitter freaked out about what they were both saying. And I think you're not going to believe this, Matt. It requires some nuance where it's like, I agree with some points he's making and I disagree with others. Like the idea that there have not always been a lot of athletes who have been in it just for money. Like, that's just silly. Like, there's always been people in every locker room. It doesn't matter what era, they were still looking for ways to make money and make a career. Like, this was still their hope, was to turn this into a job, even when you're in high school and college. Like, that's not new territory. Now, is it more prevalent now? Well, yeah, there's more money now. Like, it's not the kids' fault that it's a $1 billion industry now. Like, it's not the kids' fault that there's more money and NIL is here and all of this stuff is thrown at them, social media and everything else. So that's a complicated thing. We can get into that in a second. But in terms of the playoff, like, I look at it as, okay, this weekend was another good reminder for folks where it's like, yeah, Cincinnati belonged in the sense that like they earned it with the resume, but do they belong? Does the group of five belong in the playoff? The answer is no. The answer is no if you look at it in terms of, do they belong in the sense that like they could make a run and win a national title? No. Group of fives are playing
different. I disagree. You're saying from that game this weekend that you drew the conclusion that a group of five teams should never get in?
That they can't run the gauntlet. Like, you can't, like, Cincinnati could not beat Georgia and Bama in back-to-back weeks. I don't think.
I mean, who knows? It's possible. You know, I think since Cincinnati showed, I mean, not obviously this team can't, but I just don't want to like make a blanket statement that no team ever will be able to, you know?
I mean, I feel comfortable doing that. I feel comfortable saying like, it's just not basketball. It's not baseball. It's not like Cal State Fullerton. It's not like George Mason. It's not, college football is a different sport.
Clemson to have to beat Ohio State and Alabama in one college football playoff.
I mean, they have the same players. They have blue chippers. You have enough depth. You have enough talent that you can survive that kind of back-to-back slugfest. Most, if not all, can't.
There could be a Gonzaga come along that's not a power five, you know?
No. When you say come along, what do you mean? In a 12-team playoff?
Here. I mean, Cincinnati is a really good team. I think
sure. They're just not a great team.
Cincinnati showed that the group of five earns to get blown out by Alabama.
Yeah,
everybody.
But I think they get blown out by Georgia this year. I think they get blown out by those teams. I think the clear thing is...
It's possible.
I think the clear thing is...
Blown out by Georgia, so...
Right. Well, I think Georgia and Alabama are the clear number one, number two. Like, there's no pretenses that they are the two best teams in college football this year. Like,
I don't think that should, like, take us to the point that, like, Cincinnati should never get a chance.
Well, no, I'm not saying they
shouldn't
get a chance.
I feel like they were at least played with Alabama. Like, they didn't ever challenge them because their offense just did nothing. But, like, they did not embarrass themselves.
I'm not saying they are. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying they embarrassed. It's no different than Notre Dame. They had the Notre Dame performances, which is what I predict in the podcast. Where I'm like, I don't think they're going to get blown out, but I also just don't think this offense is good enough to do this. And then they, Sean McDonough on the broadcast was like, future first round pick Desmond Ridder. And I was like, what is happening here? He's like the eighth best quarterback prospect in the, what are we talking about?
In a down quarterback.
Yeah, like what are we talking about? This is not a real thing. I heard that and I just like, I almost blacked out.
First round quarterback in this.
Well, I mean, there's going to be four or five, but it's just not going to be him.
NFL teams convince themselves to pick him up there, but I don't think there's like a first round, like a true star in this class.
Yeah, and Desmond Ridder is a great college quarterback, but he's just not. He was not. It's kind of the Ian Book thing where it's like, unless I guess Cincinnati, if they have a just the kind of quarterback like a, I don't even know who would qualify this year, but like if they had a Sam Howell, maybe like if you just had a Sam Howell type quarterback in this Cincinnati offense, like it changes things. Like maybe
that's what it can take. Like we've seen dynamic quarterbacks come from all over the place. You know,
you need
Josh
a Kellen Moore or something
from Wyoming. You know what I mean? Like, so there's a chance a group of five can just have some extraordinary individual that can get his Vince Young on and take a team all the way to the championship. I wouldn't rule it out just from that performance.
You wouldn't rule it out from a 12-team playoff. Like, if you are a group of five school and you make the 12-team playoff, you would not rule out that they can run the gauntlet and win a national title.
I mean, most likely they won't, but it's like not, they're just, not all teams are created. That's just.
But my broader point is like, I want to split it off. Like, we just need to stop pretending that this is the same sport. Like, this is not the same sport. Like, they do not have. The players.
But think about how few years they actually get legitimate respect. So it's like, I feel like there takes like a multi-year campaign for these teams to get respect. And Boise State, for a few years there, was a legitimate college football program. Like they're still legitimate.
Yeah, they're great.
They could play with the top five, top 10 teams in the country. Like, I think Boise State was legit. And I think if they got a shot in a 14 playoff, like they might could have beaten somebody, you know. So,
but could they beat two somebodies in 10 days?
Forever. Say that again.
Could they beat a Florida with Tebow and Auburn with Cam in back-to-back weeks?
I mean, most likely not, but
that's what I'm saying. You're trying really hard not to, you know, in your heart of hearts, Matt, you're a good guy, you're making the case, you're a good dude, but like, you know, in your heart of hearts that that's not real. Like, that's not going
to
happen.
But it's not likely for Michigan to do that right now, right? It's not.
Well, Michigan has J.J. McCarthy, right? They have the five-star sitting in the wings. And maybe if he's gotten the opportunity to play the whole year, and this is something that we could talk about, where it's like, this is the one thing about Kay that scared me, where I was like, the way Michigan wanted to play, this game had to go a very, very certain kind of way. And Georgia blew that up in the first quarter. And that's a problem. And Kate, like JJ, you saw him moving out of the pocket, him being able to have that running threat, him just being the five tool player. He's not ready yet, but you need that kind of quarterback with that kind of skill set to beat Georgia. You can't play the other way. That's why Hendon Hooker had so much success against Georgia early on, was that like, there's this dynamic where you have to be a dynamic quarterback. You have to be a top five scare, like putting fear in opposing defenses to beat a team like Georgia or Alabama or something like that. And like, or you need the all time great Nick Calzada game, right? Like, or Zach Calzada, excuse me.
I'm just saying, like even someone like Georgia, as loaded as they are, they have yet to run the gauntlet and beat two top four teams like to win a playoff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's not easy for anyone to do. So I just like maybe Cincinnati designed a different way, like this exact same Cincinnati team that, you know, get some actual first round quarterback, like a Deshaun Watson or something. Like, who knows? Like that type of team, I wouldn't just rule them out.
Well, with the transfer now, you're not staying. You're leaving Cincinnati if you become that kind of player. Like, you're leaving.
I mean, it's possible, but I don't want to go all the way into that. But yeah, it's.
I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but this has been something when we first started talking college football, Matt. Like, one of the things that I've held true to this is that, like, I just want a fair fight and I want realism and I want, like, college football to me, the best part is the regular season. That's the college football regular season is great. I love it. But the postseason is just like it's been a bummer thus far. And part of fixing it is just stopping. Like, we have to get rid of this group of five, power five thing where it's just you have to have the power five only be in this. They have their own national title tournament, and then the group of five teams have their own national title. That would just be better. It's a better product. If we get App State, Boise, and like Georgia Southern when they're up, and like I don't know, just at Liberty, Louisiana.
Where I disagree with you is just it's like you're saying they're like not a top four team, I guess, essentially, but like there's not like a formula for what a top four team is, because every year is not the same. So look, if you look at the polls right now, like if Baylor hadn't just, you know, stubbed their toe and lost to TCU, like you could have made an argument for them being in the playoff.
Well, my
probably would have been in the playoff over Cincinnati.
So if you think if Cincinnati plays Arkansas schedule,
Oklahoma State.
Well, no, what I'm saying is if Cincinnati plays Arkansas schedule, what do you think the record is this year?
I mean, probably like 7-5.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like that, we look at them completely different if they play that schedule.
Probably, but we don't know that that's their record. I think that would be their record.
Are they in the playoff?
But I mean, they're probably better than Arkansas.
Are they in the playoff?
I mean, they're not in the playoff.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just they're not in the playoff.
Georgia or Alabama in the regular season, most likely. Yeah. But yeah, no, that's true. But under the what the circumstances they have, like I was okay with giving Cincinnati.
I was okay with it too,
because Notre Dame was the five. Like Notre Dame was not an impressive team at all this year. Like,
well, we learned Baylor's probably the fourth best team. Like Baylor, we learned, is probably the team that should have been there.
I think so, honestly. Yeah, the Big 12 champion, if they could have found a way to come out with one loss, that's who needed to get the fourth spot.
Yeah,
let's get into business.
Well, don't forget, folks, you can follow Matt where he's arguing online with folks, not just myself on this very podcast, on twitter.com, Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com today. If you have not already done so, every episode on the very good website. Make sure Spotify, they added ratings, and I'm not sure if they added reviews, but I know they added ratings. So make sure if you're a Spotify listener, leave the Chase Thomas Podcast 5-star rating. Matt appreciates it, especially Tori, big fan of the pod. I think she's already done the 5 stars, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Matt?
Of course.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Matt Green, let's actually dive into Georgia, Michigan. My first question to you, what happened in this football game?
Well, let me bring it back to where the way you originally brought up Georgia, Michigan, what we did at the Green household for this
ball. Right, yeah.
So, me and Tori went all out with with the orange theme, because uh-huh. we hate orange. You know, it's well documented as a Georgia fan, hate orange.
Okay.
But this is the one time to embrace the orange. So, Tori made this cake. It had like orange, icing like inside, and then I brought over a bowl of oranges because it was the orange bowl, so it was very, very festive. I got some sort of champagne, I don't even know Prosecco what brand it was, but it had like a super orange label and like the wrapping, so I was like, gotta go all out. We toasted before the game started. It was like, hey, you know, regardless of what happens, excellent season. Like,
you toasted before the game
up. Oh yeah.
Okay.
We did the same thing for the Rose Bowl. I got some rosé. I got some roses too, like to to put on the on our centerpiece, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But so yeah, it had to be real festive with the environment. But I think ultimately this game was just huge for the Kirby like narrative crowd, right? It's like this kind of justified where George is as a program, like kind of like pump the brakes, people. Like, we want to win a national title too, but like it's just Alabama that's beating us. Like, it looks like George is the second best program in college football right now. It's only Alabama that's keeping them from winning the national championship. So I think this was big for like to ultimately say this season's a success, right? Like when your team is like national championship or bust, obviously you don't win a national championship. It's a failure of a season, right? In theory, but like two national title appearances now in 5 years for Kirby. It's like, even if Georgia doesn't win this one, it's like there's some tangible like accomplishments that like Georgia is doing what big time teams do, right? Like the first green stat of the day I have for you.
I'm ready.
Kirby Smart was hired at Georgia in 2016. He has more college football playoff wins than the Pac-12, Big 12, and Big 10 combined over that period.
Hmm.
So Kirby Smart's obviously making plays at Georgia. It's just Alabama sticking in their way. So we'll see how next week turns out. But in terms of this game, I felt like my keys to the game really were Brock Bowers and James Cook offensively, and both of those guys showed out and got a touchdown. James Cook especially. James Cook with a linebacker on him is basically unguardable. So you saw him again be such a weapon in the passing game. And then it was just – we talked about who controlled the line of scrimmage was going to decide this game. Like in Georgia with 190 yards on the ground and Michigan with 91, like Georgia pretty much shut down Michigan's run game. I think Corum and Haskins combined for 52 yards on the ground on 12 carries. So like – these guys, I think, combined for like about 185 a game, and Georgia held them to 50. So you saw, I honestly felt like J.J. McCarthy gave Michigan a bigger or gave Georgia a bigger threat when he was in the game. Like Cade McNamara was just, he was missing open guys. Michigan was dropping balls. Like, I don't feel like Michigan played their best game, but I think good teams also make you play poorly. I think Georgia's defensive line was just unblockable, and that's the best, the award-winning best offensive line in college football for Michigan.
I felt bad for Cade, man. It just, and Michigan fans, like, this just unraveled so quickly. And Georgia, what did they become, the first college football team to score in their first five playoff drives? Is that what it was?
Yeah, they did. Two touchdowns, two field goals, and then a touchdown.
It was just bad. Like, it was also interesting because, like, Michigan's corners, Michigan's defense has been just really good all year. And they got toasted. That Gray toasting at the end of the first half by Burton was just bad. He got caught ball watching, and just it was ugly. It was tough sledding. But in your estimation, though, what was the biggest reason that Georgia sliced and diced Michigan?
I mean, the biggest reason they sliced and diced them is probably Stetson Bennett. Man,
He was good. That was the best I've ever seen Stetson play.
I was very impressed with how Stetson Bennett played, and I feel like he showed exactly why he's been able to keep JT Daniels on the bench. You know, it's his athletic ability. He multiple times Michigan broke through, and he was able to avoid pressure, pick up a first down with his legs. Like, he did that at least two or three times in this game. Like, that's such an underrated, or it's kind of glossed over aspect of his game. You're like, oh, look, he's a small little walk on. Like, I think the fact that he's able to make a difference with his legs, it goes such a long way. But I think Georgia they just had a gameplay. They just dominated the line of scrimmage, really. Even like this is with Aiden Hutchinson and even Will Anderson, honestly, like two Heisman candidate defensive ends, and Georgia, they basically did nothing in both games. So Aiden Hutchinson was a non-factor in this game. I think the biggest difference was Georgia was so good on first and second down and wasn't predictable. And so Njobu, I believe, is his name. He's really just more of a pass rusher. So I feel like Georgia never really got in those obvious passing downs. And I think that's what kind of neutralized them. Like, basically all the guys that we were like, this guy's going to have to play well for Michigan to win. This guy's going to have to play well. Like, none of those guys really did anything. So I think Georgia just kind of dominated defensively. Like, this really looked how Georgia's looked every year. Like, this looked like the team that played Arkansas, that played Kentucky, that played Auburn, Florida. Like, it just went out. It's went about, like, all of those games. Like, kind of dominated it at the start and then just kind of ran the ball to milk the clock in the second half. It felt like Arkansas. It was very similar to that game.
Oh, yeah, that's a good comparison.
I think Arkansas, I don't think they ever scored. I guess Kentucky was probably the most similar because Kentucky got that late touchdown. And then every Georgia game, too, a team kind of got that late touchdown, too, to kind of make the score look a little bit better. But, yeah, I think James Cook and Brock Bowers offensively just – Georgia, I think that's what's kind of been underrated is how many weapons they have just because there's been kind of so many injuries and so many different guys like Pickens – battling all his way back. Burton was battling injuries early in the year, Kyaris Jackson, but you're kind of seeing everyone they have now for the most part. Obviously we never saw Eric Gilbert or anything, but you're seeing like everything Georgia's got and they're filled with weapons. And Stetson Bennett can throw the ball a little bit, you know. We'll see if he's got what it takes to beat Bama. But you know, if he can play like he did, so my brother asked this question over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Is Desmond Ridder better than Stetson Bennett?
No.
Really? You would say no?
Yeah, no.
That kind of surprises me, but I feel like I kind of agree with you. I was like, well, I mean, if you just look what he did against Alabama, obviously he doesn't have the supporting cast that Stetson Bennett has, you know, but his numbers are nowhere close, really, as far as passing. He just, I don't know, it's interesting. I don't think Stetson Bennett can play in the NFL, but who knows? Someone could give him a shot after playing some big-time college football.
I just think it gives you, like, it's more of, like, the gunslinger thing. Like, that was something that was super frustrating for me when I was note-taking with Cincinnati. It's like, they didn't do anything really outside of the box. Like, they played Bama like they were an SEC team. Like, that's what, it looked like an old Jim Tressel Ohio State team, the way they played, too. I don't know. It's just, that's not how you beat Alabama. You have to get creative. You have to do weird stuff. You have to take a bunch of downfield shots. You have to think outside of the box and get creative offensively. And they were not the least bit creative or thoughtful. Like, that style kills teams in the AAC and can kill Notre Dame and teams like that, but it doesn't work against Alabama. So I think Stetson being outside the box, moving outside of the tackles, finding guys on the run, I think he would have given them a better shot. Yeah, no, I think Stetson has more upside for a lot of programs than Desmond Ridder does. And Desmond Ridder is like an all-time great college quarterback. Like, his win total is pretty bonkers. He's in like the top 10, I think, all-time in college football wins. But
is he did he have like 40 something?
Yeah, he's super high up there. I know he's top 10.
Okay. Yeah, I think just getting back to the Georgia game, I think ultimately this just came, like, this game showed more what Jordan Davis could do. I feel like Jordan Davis was getting kind of clowned, like being overrated or whatever after one bad clip against Alabama and just Alabama kind of, you know, neutralizing him really in that game. But this game was more his speed. And you kind of saw how he could dominate the line of scrimmage, but I honestly think this is why Georgia fans couldn't get all in on Jordan Davis for Heisman, was because he might be like the third or fourth best player on this defense. You know, this defense is just so absurd. Like, that play N'Kobe Dean made on I think it was a Blake Corum, going in motion, just running the entire sideline and just getting him for like a 3 or 4 yard loss. Like, N'Kobe Dean is just absurd. This guy's going to be a top 10 pick. Trayvon Walker and Jalen Carter were just throwing Michigan offensive line, the best offensive line in the country too. They're just throwing these guys around. Like, it was just super impressive what Georgia's defense was able to do.
For sure. I'll end with this. So Mark Bradley, writer for the AJC, he had a really good piece wrapping up this game. And he said, quote, Bennett's first half stats, 16 completions on 22 passes for 234 yards and 2 TDs. Georgia led 27-3 at halftime. Imagine what the margin might have been had dumb old Smart wised up and handed the job to JT Daniels. He continued, said Cook of McIntosh's lovely delivery on that touchdown throw from McIntosh. This whole week, he didn't throw a good pass in practice. I was stunned by that one. I can't believe coordinator Todd Monken even called it, but he threw a good one there. How surprised were you about that play call?
Oh, man, I was shocked by that, especially because you heard like multiple times brought up this week about how Jim Harbaugh, like Michigan's always going to have these wrinkles and they know when to dial up trick plays. It was kind of cool to see Georgia be the one to dial up the trick play. And like, what a throw also. Like, he wasn't even really open when he threw it. He just kind of like threw it to the spot. Like, it was perfect spiral. So impressive for a running back. But yeah, I mean, right when that happened, like, that's like one of those things early in a game that it's like, okay, this game's starting to feel different. It's starting to feel like we, you know, you kind of have the team on the ropes. And then once Georgia got the, like, what was it? Before the half, I think before the half in the third, and then the start of the third quarter, there was three straight turnovers for Michigan. It was the interception before the half. That was obvious pass interference. I'm not really sure why that wasn't called on Darian Kendrick. And then that weird drive of a minute and a half where Georgia didn't try to do anything when they got the ball at the 40. That was strange to close out the half, but yeah, the Georgia defense looked dominant again, and it was nice to see.
Any final thoughts on Georgia's domination of the Michigan Wolverines before we move to Alabama Cincinnati quickly?
Oh, that's all I got. I'm pretty sure. Mm. I haven't done all the research on this.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure 2014 Ohio State might be the only Big Ten champion to beat like an SEC team in a bowl game, like ever.
Hmm.
I think it might be the only time it's ever happened. Like, it's just, it's kind of crazy when you look at it, how when the Big Ten champion gets lined up with an SEC team, it usually does not go well for them.
I will say, is this a take? And this was something I wrote down. And sorry, Max Markovich, fellow Atlanta sports guy on this very podcast. This pains me, but this was something that I was thinking about. I'm not sure if I mentioned it on the pod or not. Sometimes I don't remember where I had these sports conversations. But I thought when this matchup got released that, like, for me, this is the third best Big Ten matchup for Georgia. Like, I would probably rank it, Ohio State would give Georgia the best game. And we saw with that offense in the Utah game and just the receivers that were out and still what their main man, number 11, pulled off there. But, and then Peyton Thorne, and if Kenneth Walker plays, and he would play in a playoff game, like Michigan State and I think Ohio State would have been a much more entertaining and interesting game. Like, they would have given... I think they would have given Georgia a lot. I'm not saying they would have beaten them, but I think we would have seen 3 to 4 quarters of close back and forth, high octane offense action.
That's probably true. It's like, you know, when you say like no disrespect and you're obviously immediately going to disrespect somebody, you know, like it's no disrespect to Michigan, but everyone believes Ohio State was the best team in the Big Ten mm-hmm. this year. You know, like the elements came into play in Ann Arbor for mm-hmm. Ohio State, Michigan. Like, obviously Michigan had to play in the snow too, but, you know, it kind of went better with the kind of style of team they are. Like, not to blame everything on weather, you know, but I think most people thought Ohio State was the better team. Michigan happened to win that day and got in the college football playoff. But yeah, I think Ohio State would have been a much more you know, scary matchup for this Georgia defense.
Cincinnati, Bama. We talked about it a little bit, but outside of the things that we've talked about, like what really killed Cincinnati? Like it was a really mean first drive from Nick Saban, just running the ball down their throats the way they did. And Brian Robinson looks as healthy as he's been in a long time. Something I did notice though is there is something different with this offense without John Metchie. Like it didn't show up all that much in this one, I shouldn't say it didn't show up. It didn't matter all that much in this one because Cincinnati's offense never posed a real threat to Alabama once in this particular football game. But I do think the Metchie aspect is going to it's going to be a big, big thing going into this rematch, not having Metchie, because Ja'Cory Brooks and Slade Bolden are cool, but it's just it can't all be Jameson Williams and then getting cute with Bolden and Brooks and a lot of inexperience there. But that was my biggest takeaway, is Bama was able to run the football and they were able to get that back. And we wondered, and you rightly predicted, that Bama would be able to run the football on this good Cincinnati front. And they were also able to pass on them when they needed to. I don't know. It was just never in doubt. And I don't know if there's really a whole lot to glean from it. It's just that, like, Cincinnati was ever matched. They never had a shot. It was a gigantic waste of 3.5 hours if you're not a Cincinnati fan and wanted to see what happened there. But I don't know. I don't really have a strong take on any of this, because it just all kind of happened how we expected, right?
Yeah, I appreciate you tooting my horn so I don't have to to toot it myself. But yeah, I felt like that's what everyone's kind of overlooking going into this game, because of how dynamic Bryce Young and his passing game is. It's like, they do that to SEC teams because they can actually shut down their run. And you saw Alabama struggle a lot to run the ball in the SEC this year. But you saw Brian Robinson, you know, he clearly looked healthier than he was in the final games of the regular season. And yeah, 300 yards rushing on this Cincinnati defense. I thought, I can't take too much away from this, like, in terms of saying, I think, well, we both personally think Mechie is going to be a big loss for this offense, right? But I can't necessarily say from this performance that he is, just because they didn't really need to throw the ball to beat Cincinnati. So I think Alabama's got so many playmakers. You know, you're seeing, like, a guy like Ja'Cory Brooks step up the last few games. Like, he can probably step in. Slade Bolden obviously had a touchdown in this one too. Like, I just, as much as it is an absence, it's like Alabama seems immune to stuff like that. Like, they, with the few years ago when they had like five linebackers that all had like season ending injuries, and they still won the national championship. They just it's kind of next man up for them. So I hope, as a Georgia fan, obviously, that, you know, maybe the loss of Mechie is a small enough difference to maybe give Georgia an edge in a rematch. But it's hard to say, because this Alabama, and especially with, like, Georgia was facing a dinged up Brian Robinson. Like, they didn't even know if he was going to go in that game. And so, you know, maybe seeing this offensive line more at full strength. You saw Chris Owens go down near the end of that game, and he's who they've had in at right tackle since benching, I think, Damian George. So if, I don't know how serious that injury is, but if Damian George has to be back at right tackle, like, that could be a huge weakness for Alabama. But I think you're kind of seeing this team, like, hit their stride, and, you know, they kind of dominated the on the offensive line in this game. And obviously Cincinnati, it does not have the front that Georgia's got. So Georgia should be able to limit the running game. But I think that's the biggest reason why I kind of saw it happening this way, was because they ran the ball on Georgia enough to keep them honest. So if they can do that again, like, it's going to, Alabama's going to be tough to beat. But yeah, this was pretty much just domination. I gotta give Cincinnati's defense credit for just keeping them in the game. I mean, what was this, 17-6 going into the fourth quarter? Like, it was kind of like you said with Notre Dame last year. Like, Notre Dame never challenged Alabama, but they hung in the game, and it was, they didn't get embarrassed. I feel like if that was the biggest conclusion I drew from this game, like, it was kind of the opposite, it sounds like, from you, is I felt like, okay, Cincinnati, they didn't get embarrassed. Like, 17-6 going into the fourth quarter, like, is Notre Dame going to do better than that? Is Baylor, Oklahoma State going to do better than that? Obviously, I guess Ohio State.
I think Ohio State would do better, yeah.
People probably think Ohio State would, but they obviously lost two games.
I think Clemson would too.
It's possible, but those teams obviously didn't deserve to be.
I'm not disagreeing with that. Yeah, for sure. They deserved, yeah, based on what was, like, Cincinnati beat everybody they were supposed to beat. They deserved to be in. All that is true. Shout out to Action Cookbook. He was on the pod last week. He was happy. Like, to Cincinnati legend. Like, he's great. And Cincinnati fans are great. They enjoyed it. It was a great thing. They got to experience the college football playoff. And like you said, Notre Dame, whoever, like, most teams are going down to Alabama. That's just part of the deal. However, it was just one of those where I'm like, this offense, like, it just, I don't know. It works in other areas, but they are the Group of Five champions, and I just can't shake it, Matt. I would rather see Cincinnati versus Nevada and Carson Strong in a national title for a Group of Five school than I would Cincinnati, Alabama ever again. Like, I would just prefer Group of Fives getting their own tournament. That would be so much
five,
more fun.
A Group of Five tournament would be excellent television. Oh,
would it not? That's what I'm saying. It would be great.
Oh, and also, I have my second green line stat of the week. Was, I don't know if you saw this while you're watching the game.
Mm.
I don't know, who do you want to say broke this record? I guess Alabama broke the record. Cincinnati broke the record. Cincinnati had the fewest first half yards in the history of the college football playoff, with 76 in the entire first half. They had 60 on the first drive and then had 76 in the entire first half. But your trivia question is what record did they break? What was the previous record for fewest yards in the first half of a college football playoff game?
Oh, I have no idea. What is it?
That would be the 2017 season, 2018 college football national championship.
Is this
game.
Washington?
No, championship game.
Oh, championship.
And the Georgia Bulldogs held Alabama to 89 yards.
Wow.
In the first half, and Jalen Hurts was benched, and then nothing else happened in that game that's worth really noteworthy things. But yeah, so that was Alabama's defense put together a dominant performance.
Mm.
But it also, like you said, it fell a little on Desmond Ridder too. Felt like he didn't really do much to give him.
Do you know who else had a dominant performance in this college football bowl season this past week?
Who's that?
The ACC officials who called the Tennessee-Purdue game on Thursday.
Oh.
They had a great week. Shout out to them.
How you feeling? I know you've cooled off, but can we?
No, I'm not cooled off because the Falcons had one of the dumbest endings of all time too. So Tennessee basketball blew a great lead. They were leading the whole game against Alabama on the road on, what was that, Wednesday now? It feels like forever ago. On the road, no Kennedy Chandler Folkey. They were both out with COVID. So they weren't even really supposed to win that game, but then they were winning the whole way, and then they lose in just excruciatingly dumb fashion late. And then we follow that up the next day with Tennessee. Okay. Oh, let's just do this. I just need to
get this up. What an amazing football game, though.
Well, Tennessee just only plays amazing football games, it seems like.
that's a good point.
They're must-see television. There's a case to be made that they should be in every playoff game to save the college football playoff. Like, they're not going to win them, but like them being in, yeah, guess what?
They'll give you a show.
They will give you a show. Cedric Tillman cannot be stopped. Hendon Hooker had a below-average game and had like 60 TDs, no picks. We had almost 700 yards total offense. People on Twitter, I should never go on Twitter. Like, Twitter's a bad place, but the way people will talk about hype bowl and stuff like that, it's always funny when you see people, like, you see this with Georgia fans, or not even Georgia fans, people who watch Georgia every now and then they'll have a take and you're like, oh, clearly this person has not watched a Georgia game, or Kirby Smart or Tom Monken offense, whatever. That's how it is right now with me when I'll look at stuff and they're like, why would hype, like, that play calling was terrible late on that last drive. Cedric Tillman getting pulled, like, clear as day. Like, when you have an explosive offense the way the Tennessee Volunteers do, when you live and die by explosion, when you live and die by tempo, when you live and die by putting defense, like, they are the antithesis of the Cincinnati Bearcats. Like, it's all imagination all the time in the Tennessee offense. It's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory up here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And this offense quietly put together almost 700 yards of total offense in this one. Warren Burrell, I texted the family group chat, was just, we were all heated, and it was a lot going on. Yeah. Well, send him back. Cause I texted him ahead of time. I was like, where we'll lose this game is Warren Burrell is going to get attacked all day. He's been awful all year, and his PFF career is like 48%, I think, in coverage in this one. But, him and the linebackers, and Jeremy Banks had a great game. An all-time great game. Beasley was awful. Linebackers is an issue, and Warren Burrell was an issue, and I think it was McCullough who really had another bad game in this one. But, and not having Alante Taylor hurt, he did not play as a senior and getting ready for the draft. But all that being said, the ending to this football game, where, I mean, Tennessee should have won in regulation. That happened. Like, Tennessee won because people were like, oh, you can't go, that's why you don't go deep. Tennessee was going deep all day. They were big play after big play after big play. Purdue had no answers. They were so gassed. The amount of plays that were run, the amount of time that Purdue was on the field, like they were gassed.
I mean, I don't think any either team had any.
Well, the whole point is just being like, why would you not? Why were you going deep still? Have you watched this game at all? Have you watched Josh Heupel play, at, like, call a game at all? Like, they have no answer. We have almost 700 yards of total offense in regulation. They have no answer. Cedric Tillman was open. Javonte, or I think it was Velus Jones on that side, was open. It, Hooker just missed the ball a little bit. Like, both plays were great. Velus was open. It was the right play call. Guess what? Cedric Tillman, if they call the pass interference, it's 15 yards. That's an easy field goal. He makes it. It's over. Okay, great. Then in overtime, he's on top of the dude. And he just rolls over, and they stop progress, and the whole explanation is just, it gets weirder, and the explanation after, and it was awful. He was in, and anyone, it's like one of those things where if you watch it in real time, and you know, like, oh yeah, obviously a touchdown, he's on top, you can't blow that dead. He's still rolling over. And the ball is clearly across the plane. He's in, game over. Like,
he's clearly on top of the defender.
You can't call the play dead and forward momentum dead when you're at the goal. Like, who does that? That's not a thing. There was no, like, none of that was real. And I couldn't believe what was happening. And I should have, because if you watch any, like, a whole season of Tennessee football is not good for the health. A whole season of Tennessee and Atlanta Falcons football is not good for the health. Like, me having to do the Atlanta Falcons today and that whole situation that happened in Buffalo, Matt Ryan, I don't know if you saw that ending today.
I didn't actually.
Okay. I don't even want to go. I might have an aneurysm if I go both Falcons and Tennessee Vols on this very podcast. But, like, it was awful. And Tennessee won, and then I did a walk, and the Sports Renaissance woman came at the tail end, and I was like, we just gotta go for a walk, because I am just, the level of just apoplectic, just anger at what just transpired, where I was like, I can't even fathom what just happened and how we've just lost this football game. This is the dumbest ending to any, the game was 5 hours long. These games are forever. This game started at, like, 3 o'clock, and it ended at 8, almost. But yeah, it was.
But what I will say about the Trans Perfect Music City Bowl is
the field sucks.
Perfectly timed because I think Danny Cannell, I don't know if he's a friend of the pod or not, but you heard this man talk about how there's too many bowl games, right? Like, literally the next day, it was this Tennessee Purdue game.
Yeah.
So I feel like people were like, suck it, Danny Cannell. We want Tennessee Purdue giving us 1,200 yards of offense and 90 points or however many they scored in this game. Like, this was an incredible game. I feel like it kind of started, and that's what it is too. It's like, don't let these early bowl games make you forget how entertaining some of these later bowl games are.
When it's also just like, don't watch it. I've never understood this take of, like, in anything. It's like, there's too much of that. Then don't watch it. Or it's like, there's too much of this stuff. Then don't buy it.
Twitter social media phenomenon. Like, I don't like something. No one should ever watch it. But yeah, it was an amazing game. And we got a bunch of good ones. Like, I feel like right after North Carolina, South Carolina too, like seeing the mayonnaise, just the mayonnaise festival that was.
Wait, hold on. No, you got to mention that they almost killed our guy, Shane Beamer.
Oh, yeah. Just drilled him with that.
Yeah.
Where were their first coach mayonnaise bath?
Like, that had to hurt, right? Like, that had to hurt.
I'm sure it did a little bit. But yeah, I felt like it was amazing marketing. Like, I think somebody said this. It's not my original thought that it was like the most profitable, like, 4 hour, like, bowl sponsor of all time.
That's what we want, like, man.
Like, profitability, it really was, sir. Like, it was like every quarter, it was like they were dunking Oreos in mayonnaise. And
Golic's a champion, man. Golic
Jr.
doing is
all kinds of stuff, like just bringing up the mayonnaise over and over again. And be like, taste it, like, oh, this is better than I thought, you know. And then just showing how disgusting your product is, dumping it over a person, and it's like, awesome. Eat our mayonnaise. And I don't know.
Did you try it?
I have not tried Duke's Mayo.
No, I'm saying Duke's Mayo with the Oreo.
Would I try that?
Yeah.
Probably not.
I hate mayonnaise. Mayo. Like, I hate mayonnaise.
I'm a person who actually will eat mayonnaise. And okay.
On what?
I do not want to, like, do anything extra with mayonnaise.
Like, what are you putting mayonnaise
put
on?
Put it on a sandwich. Okay. Like a ham and turkey sandwich or something.
Oh, ham and turkey. Are you putting ham and turkey on the same sandwich?
Oh, yeah, man. Ham and turkey sandwich. That's my jam.
Do you toast it?
I could. I don't have to.
Toasted's way to go, man. When I started toasting my sandwiches, there was no looking back. There was no going back.
That's fair.
But yeah, it ended, and it was an exhibition game, and then that was the whole thing. I'm like, Sam, why am I so upset about an exhibition game? This is the dumbest thing to be really upset about for the rest of the night. But I was just like, I'm stewing. Like, I'm going to stew for the rest of this evening. Like, I'm just stewing over an exhibition game. This is the dumbest thing.
I have a take on bowl games. You know, make bowl games great again, like we talked about in the podcast last week. I think the key to making bowl games great again is they need to be on Saturdays. Mm. It'll never happen because it's a TV deal. You know, it's all about the TV and the commercials. And so you want people to be randomly watching your AutoZone Liberty Bowl on a Wednesday, you know, like, but I just felt like the crowd is what makes these games feel meaningless and not meaningless. Like when you're watching some of these games, like I watch Minnesota and West Virginia and you're like, okay, like this is fine. And then you tune into Clemson, Iowa State, and you're like, okay, there's a crowd here. This is a solid atmosphere, you know? Like, so like, I feel like Tennessee Purdue was one of those, like Kentucky, Iowa was one of those that like, I was more like the importance of Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. It's obviously a better bowl game than Kentucky, Iowa. And I even clowned Kentucky, Iowa on the podcast, like probably not watching that game. Mm,
we think we not both did. Yeah. That had no business being a fun game,
but it's like, it was just the crowd. It was like the atmosphere. It was like the Citrus Bowl matters to Iowa fans and that matters to Kentucky fans. So that game just, it felt important and it was a fun game to watch. So I feel like January 1st is a day a lot of people have as a holiday. And so that's never been a problem, like the attendance on those games in general, I feel like. But if these games are in January 1st was a Saturday, but if these games on Saturday just felt more like college football games when I was watching on Saturday, like, and I feel like that's what some of these bowl games are losing. Like, I just feel like every bowl game, if it was played on a Saturday, I feel like it would just have a little bit more importance. And like, we have like 6, 8, 10 like games of like good teams. Like those weekends could be amazing. Like, but I know they want that one day for the playoff to kind of be its own thing. But I don't know. I think that could go a long way. It'll never happen because it's a TV deal and ESPN wants eyes on televisions on random days in December, you know, all throughout the month. But I feel like that would go a long way in just getting the attendance and just like the energy up for some of these games.
I love that idea. It will never happen because they want it on at all times during this time of year. Because I think the ratings are good to have them on. Like, ratings aren't struggling. The only people who are complaining are the people who are just like, they're just looking for a take. It's like, you don't need a take on this. It's fine. Like, let people like what they like. And clearly people like having a lot of bowl games. And I think if there were more bowl games, I think the majority of folks would actually prefer that. I don't think people are like, I don't think the average fan, college football,
we know
fan
college
is upset
football
about it.
Talking heads are not never biased, you know. Mm. So Florida State used to love to flex that bowl game streak they had going there for a while. So now they're not in bowl games. Danny Cannell's like, it's too many bowl games. No one even likes these bowl games anyway. Let's get rid of these games.
Yeah, well, there's a different conversation, and we could, I guess, we can run through the last little bit here with the Ohio State quarterback or receiver, 15 for 347, like our bowl highlights for the last couple days since our last recording. We had 3 TDs for him. He went off in their comeback win against Utah, because the Rose Bowl, also a game that can never be normal for a lot of fun reasons. I think my favorite Rose Bowl is still USC. Penn State with Saquon and everybody, that was still like the most outrageous for me.
Outside of like the national championship, right?
Yeah.
Like the Vince Young.
Yeah. I guess Vince Young had true
number one. But that USC Penn State, that game was a really like fun game.
I was thinking like non-national title. I was just thinking like I should have clarified. Yeah, the non-national title variety. Like,
I think there was a Michigan USC with Chad Henne.
Yeah.
That was like a really good game. I can't even remember who won, to be honest. I want to say Michigan won, but okay. They might not have. Yeah, there's obviously the Rose, Oklahoma, Georgia. That's probably like the best Rose Bowl. That's one of the best college football games ever. But that
didn't enjoy it. Oh man, no, that was definitely. That's going to be hard to top. And this whole second half and the flip the script and everything. Yeah, you're probably right. But it also just blurs it. And this is something that I mentioned to the Sports Renaissance when I'm like, we got to get rid of this. This is the dumbest thing that we're still calling like the college football semifinal playoff game. Also, the college football
Rose Bowl. Capital One.
Yeah, like
whatever is like the specific credit card.
Like, right. We got to get rid of that. That's got to go. Like, I just call them the playoff games and play them wherever, but we got to get rid of. I don't like, because I think. I don't know if you agree, but like it clouds the bowl stuff where it's like, I don't really consider that the Cotton Bowl. Like, that's not the Cotton Bowl. That's a college football playoff game. The Cotton Bowl is just not, I don't know. For me, it clouds the history and it makes it more complicated.
You're looking at Peach Bowl history. It's like, oh, well, actually that time the Peach Bowl was an important game that people cared about.
Correct. Yeah. It's just weird.
But there's something about the Rose Bowl. I feel like teams are never, they're never down in the Rose Bowl. There's crazy games. This one this year was like, this had to be one of the best Rose Bowls of all time. Like, there's just a bunch of crazy games. I feel like it was an excellent weekend of college football.
Yeah. Well, you had a question for me. We thought we could wrap up bowl season with first you can go through the results if you have those in front of you, our ending.
Oh, man. It's not looking good for you.
Okay. Well, we don't have to do that tonight.
I'll go through the numbers here. I have 553 points. 533 points, I should say. You have 380 points. So I'm kind of dominating you as far as that goes.
Okay.
My record overall, 25-11.
Mm.
Which I feel like it's pretty strong. Not to toot my own horn over here, but and your record overall is 17-19.
Oh,
so not great. They got two more games. You could potentially get to 500 with these last two games you got. I mean, I guess we're gonna record again to do our Georgia Alabama picks.
Yeah, probably Sunday.
But you picked LSU we both picked LSU to win this game. Like, how random is it that the Tax Act Bowl is just, like, all the games have been played. College football, first round's been played.
Yeah.
And now, a couple days later, we're going to play the Tax Act Texas Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's such a random calendar. I think that's what kind of makes college football cool, but also kind of hard to keep up with at this time of the year.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll.
But that's the whole thing is, like, I don't care about, who cares about keeping up with it, because it's exhibition games. What are we arguing about? It's just free exhibition games on when nothing else would be on. Like, it doesn't harm anything. Who cares?
That's, I like the ultimate. Yeah. That's, I definitely agree with you. There's something on, and I love, like, oh, I'm on my lunch break and Houston and Auburn is on right now. This is awesome.
Right. And then there's the inverse where it's like, I'm turning this off.
Danny Cannell would prefer to be on his lunch break, but that's just me.
Might be a soap opera guy. might be on Ion Television, Criminal Minds. I don't know. Well, you had a game. Which one we thought was the best bowl name this college football season? I have an answer for you.
All right. Hit me with your number one.
My number one is the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl.
Ooh. You know, I kind of forgot about that one because they didn't play it this year.
Yeah.
That's really strong. Pacific Life Holiday Bowl just sounds normal to me.
Mm-hmm.
The San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl, that's a great answer. My favorite bowl game, it almost came down to both bowls in Frisco, Texas.
Okay.
So the close second was the Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl. That was strong.
When I think tropics, I think Frisco, Texas.
Exactly. But I really like the Frisco Football Classic presented by That was my favorite name of the bowl season. That was Frisco, Texas is where you go to get some great bowl names.
Oh, my God. I also love the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, just because We're just calling it Tony the Tiger now. But also,
it's not the Frosted Flakes Sun
right?
Bowl.
It's just the mascot. It's Tony the Tiger, but it's also the Sun Bowl. But the Tony the Tiger, and when I think sun, I think tigers and Tony the Tiger. I don't know. Yeah, that's good. They're getting crazier and crazier. As we wrap up here, Matt Green, we got to hit some news. There was some stuff that I wanted to hit you on. And Todd Graham's son, and I wanted to ask you this. Todd Graham's son at Hawaii entered the transfer portal. How do you think that conversation goes? That's what I wanted to ask you about this. Is like, how does this go? Because a lot of kids in the transfer portal, they don't tell their coaches. They just put their name in there and see what's happening. Is this a power play by a son to be like, I want to play more? Like, I don't care. I'll go somewhere else. I'll show you. I can go out on my own.
I can play wherever I want, Dad.
How does that go? I don't know how that...
I'm
my
sure
dad...
it's not that awkward. I'm sure...
You don't think
so? Like, his dad's in the business. You know, he just knows what this is. And what position is he?
I don't know off the top of my head. I'm not sure.
He's not a quarterback, right?
Well, it's a whole family affair over there in Hawaii now, because I think the brother is the offensive coordinator.
That's right. So, yeah, I'm not sure what position. We might should know what position he is, but it's probably not awkward. It's probably
he's a DB.
Like, okay, it's probably like, yeah, I mean, if you got a better opportunity somewhere else, like, do your thing, you know? Like, he's probably just wants the best for his son. I mean, who knows? It could be some crazy family.
I mean, is it a good sign if your son's quitting on your team? Is it a good sign if your son's like, I'm out. I don't like what you're doing here. I don't like what you're building.
It's definitely not a good sign. Like, if the program was doing well, you would think the brother is a coach, an assistant coach, and you would think you'd probably want to play there. But, you know.
Venable's son didn't leave Clemson. It wasn't like he was dipping like a lack of playing time. He was like, no, we're doing pretty well. It's pretty cool playing for Clemson.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, to each their own. It would be nice if there was some kind of crazy story to it and some family drama that we could all talk about. But I don't know. I don't know anything about the situation necessarily. So I don't want to speculate wildly.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where you see it and you're just like, what in the world? That doesn't happen very often. The last big thing before we wrap, I want to end on Herb Street. Comments and just how players play now, but Chip Kelly might not be back at UCLA next year. And this is something like we are recording, it's January 3rd, and a coaching change, like there have been some late ones this year, but something like this would be pretty bonkers. And it's so complicated what's going on at UCLA right now. A lot of the California schools, Matt, are in dire straits financially, it looks like, because Cal is just like, Cal is unwinnable. Like, their financial situation and their athletic department, like, it's just bad. Like, Cal is in forever dire straits. Like, I don't know how you fix that. But UCLA also not in good. They're carrying a multi-year deficit of $40 million. So this is all to say, per Football Scoop, with the end of the season, Chip Kelly is now under contract only for 2022. But that's not all. Quote, as of today, his buyout is $9 million. As of January 16th, that number drops to zero. John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News wrote this. To be clear, this is him saying this. Quote, to be clear, we believe it's more likely than not that Kelly will coach the Bruins next season, but by no means is his return guaranteed, according to sources familiar with the situation. As he writes, there are three options before UCLA. Let him walk, which then involves resetting the program in the middle of January, a headache of an endeavor at a disadvantageous time. Extend Kelly, but the chess move there is finding a number that works for both sides, too much money, and it exacerbates UCLA's budgetary issues. Like I said, the $40 million for a multi-year deficit. Too little, and Kelly could feel insulted and walk on his own. What in the world is going on at UCLA? What do you make of all of that?
Yeah, that's just an absurd situation, really. I feel like this is why it feels like the Pac-12 is just, I don't know, they're just a whole nother level below the rest of college football. Yeah. It's like you're doing things like potentially firing your head coach in the middle of January to save some money. It's like, No SEC school would ever do that. Like, yeah. Everyone, like, an SEC buyouts are like the national deficit, right? Like, yeah, that you can talk about the number like it matters, but if you really want to fire your coach and you're Auburn, you're gonna pay that, and you're just gonna move on. Like, to actually make these decisions for like financial reasons, for anything other than football performance, it shows why UCLA and some of these teams in the Pac-12 are just so behind.
It'd be
and
wild.
It makes sense. You watch some of these games, even USC. Like, USC is the, you know, cream of the crop in the Pac-12. And you watch some of those games this past year, and there can't be more than 10,000 people at those games. Like, it just, I think even CJ Stroud said something about that recently. I don't know if you saw that quote. He was talking about, like, you go to USC for like kind of like a vacation. It's like a cool visit to go on and everything, but it's like, it's just, people are just kind of hanging out. There's not the environment. Like, you go to Ohio State and you go to some of these SEC schools, it's like just a completely different animal. Like, and that's a guy from California just kind of saying that about the local school. So USC has all the tradition they have, and you talk about Cal being in financial struggles, like, Oregon seems to be the only program out there, and I think now probably USC again with Lincoln Riley, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But like the whole conference just kind of seems like, you know, no better than a group of five, really.
That's fair. Well, let's wrap with Kirk Herbstreit's comments that got him under fire this week on College Game Day before Utah Ohio State. So he already clarified some of this stuff, but man, I don't know. When I heard it, I saw the reaction on Twitter and I was like, okay, let me go watch this whole thing and see what he said. I think it was a little bit hyperbolic, but the crux of him saying that the bowl opt-outs is different. Like, I don't think we're going to see bowl opt-outs and play. Like, I was actually arguing about this with the family group chat, where they were like, well, it's going to happen eventually. Is a player's going to opt out of a playoff game? And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, I still think we're a long way away from that. And I think NFL teams would drop players from their board entirely if they opted out of the playoff game. Like, that would say something about your character if you wouldn't even play for your team in a playoff game. Like, I think that's like a totally different thing. Like, they don't care if you're missing exhibition games, like the Matt Corral situation, where it's like, we get it. Like, he could have had a devastating injury, and thankfully it looks like he's going to be okay. But there's a totally different situation there. However, him saying that kids don't, like, today don't love football is not completely correct. But what he could have said, and this is part of the issues with TV, and I'm sure if he did like a whole podcast, like, there would be a lot more context around this. But him saying, I think, quote, I think this era of player just doesn't love football. I don't think you can't make that general of a statement. Like, it's just not true. There are all kinds of college football players that love playing college football, and most college football players don't have NFL plans. Like, that's something we forget sometimes, because we are so hyper focused on the playoff and the teams that have all the blue chippers that are focused. So do I think the blue chippers don't really love football by and large? Yeah, most don't. It's a job. But I don't think that's been all that different than players before, where, like, you're still playing a sport in college. You're still playing a sport in the pros. You're still doing all the time at AAU or summer league camps and doing all the 5-on-5s and doing everything like that to turn this into a career where you can make money. And there's all kinds of people that are good at stuff that don't love what they're good at. They just happen to be blessed with certain abilities that make them good at that. And they just do it because, hey, it's an opportunity to help my family, to help set me up for the rest of my life, all that. There's nothing wrong with it. But is there some truth that there is a difference where it's like the brand stuff is crazy? The NIL money makes everything more complicated, that more kids are brand, and thinking about themselves more than kids in the past. I do think that's true. I do think that you're seeing more and more of that. If you talk to high school coaches, if you talk to people around, it's just the way it is. Like, it's better for the players, and that's good, but it does have ramifications, and I do think it makes it harder to coach. I do think there is a lot more, like, I got to protect myself at all costs, but I get it, because it is a business for a lot of these 4 or 5 star kids who want to get to the league and want to make checks and know that football players don't have a long, like, they're not going to be in the NFL very long. The NFL contract and the NFL time is so limited and so short. You got to make your money before an injury and get out of there, that, like, you're threading such a fine line, threading such a needle there, whatever the expression is, it's late.
Well, and the other aspect of it, too,
does that all make sense? I feel like I'm kind of rambling, but I'm trying to, like, this is something that I've been sitting on for the last couple of days, because I do think that there is so much more nuance needed with this kind of conversation.
No, there's a lot of nuance for sure. And I think the main point is when you talk about the earnings aspect, it's like, yeah, kids are definitely different now, you know, college students are, you know, the NIL stuff is different, but also just growing up in the era of social media and a lot more, you know, me first type things, like, sure, that's, there's probably some truth to that, but it's obviously just sloppy to generalize in that way ever. And Kirk Herbstreit obviously knows that, and he apologized for that. And you got to give Kirk Herbstreit some leeway, because what, he was at Hard Rock Stadium till at least midnight, right? This guy was back in the Rose Bowl. It was like 8 a.m. or something, back on the air. Who knows how much sleep this man got. But no, but the NFL earnings are not what they once were. So, you know, you could come back and be a first-round pick in 1975, 1985, or 1992 when Desmond Howard's coming out of college. Like, and that's, you're not making what these guys are making now out of college. So it is an investment. Like, yeah, their body is their future. So if I have one more game, it's not going to determine if my team is winning a championship or not. Like, I don't want to get hurt in this game. That's really, you know, I don't want to say meaningless, but this game that it essentially doesn't matter to the future of this program. So it's like, you do have to focus finally on yourself, because, I mean, that's what you go to college for, right? Like, everyone else that goes to college for anything, any other degree, is focusing on themselves first. And yeah, they might have a great job working for the local paper, but they got a huge gig nationally and they're going to take that. You know, it's like we understand loyalty to an extent in all other jobs, but it's like this sports, at the players are supposed to just be loyal over more loyal than anybody else, just because we all love the team so much. It's like it just looks tone deaf, of course, when you talk about the coaches bouncing on the team before the bowl game. So it's like, it's you're not going to get much sympathy when you make a point like that. And it's there's obviously still dudes that love football. You know,
right.
There's just,
like, there's not a crisis here. Like, it's just different. Like, some kids' mindsets are different. And I think, but to pretend that there have not always been, like, it's still not a business ultimately, and they're still not training for a business and trying to create their own brand. It's just different. Like, all it is just different. And I think maybe it's like kids are more public because they have social. Like, kids are more public about that, like, I'm here for business reasons. Like, what did you think kids were going to Alabama for the last 17 years? Why do you think kids are going to Georgia right now? They're not going because they love Athens and they want the college experience. Like, they're going, like, Bryce Young.
This team puts defensive backs in the NFL.
Yeah, like, that's why I'm going here.
I want to go to the NFL. I'll go there.
Yeah. Like, basically what's happening now is we're just not pretending as much anymore. And maybe that's not a good thing. Is like, it's better for fans to pretend that, or this false vision that, like, all these guys are here to live and die for their school, when in actuality, it's like, no, this is a business decision, and this DC is good for my game. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. And I just think the, like we said it before, like the Saturdays is one idea, but it's just, I don't know. Like, if you could just make these games convenient to travel to, because I think the crowd is just affects college football games so much. So if you can have, obviously it's cool for someone to go to the Bahamas, you know, and go to some of these cool environments, go to these cool travel and stuff like that for these players, you know, do these cool things these bowl games do. But it's also cool when you have Purdue and Tennessee playing in Nashville, and it's what, an hour and a half, 2 hour drive from Knoxville to Nashville. And there's probably more Tennessee fans in Nashville than any other team anyway.
And Vanderbilt's there. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably a Tennessee city. But and then you have what Purdue's probably what 3 or 4 hours away from Nashville. Like it's nice when you can get some of these games that are kind of neutral, kind of centrally located. Like I feel like you get good crowds for those games. You can't really plan for something like that when you're the New Mexico Bowl. You know, you're just like, someone please play in our bowl. But I don't know. There's something, if you could just do something about the making these, and maybe it's, you know, playing some of these home games. Maybe give someone a home game and just put roofclaim.com signs all over Auburn's campus, you know, or Western Kentucky's campus, whoever's playing in that bowl game this year. Like, you just have all kinds of branding or something. But it would be cool if you could figure out a way to just kind of invigorate some energy into those games. Because honestly, like when you're someone like Georgia watching a bowl game, a Sugar Bowl or Peach Bowl, when you miss out on the playoff, like it's unfortunate when you see Eric Stokes is not going to play in the game, DeAndre Swift's not going to play in the game, like things like that. But you're also, you know, the game isn't really going to get you to a national championship. So just seeing your team play and seeing who's going to potentially play next year, like that's a cool reason to watch a football game if you're a fan of that team. So I think for the too many bowl games crowd, you know, they can watch something else.
I think that's how we end it. That's a good way of ending things, Matt Green.
Yes, sir. Mic drop.
That was good. I like that. Was that planned?
It was not. It just worked out that way, sir.
I like it. Well, we can find you, Matt Green, on Twitter.com at Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com today. If you have not already done so, make sure you leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify, whichever you listen to this very podcast at. Subscribe to the newsletter, sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. But yeah, all kinds of good stuff. Email us if you have some college football questions you'd like us to answer in the future. ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Matt, a couple days, several days, we'll be back to preview the Georgia-Alabama rematch, the national title preview extravaganza edition. Man, it's happening again. We have a week to prepare and get right and see how it's going to go. I have a gut feeling that we're going to be on opposite sides of what we think is going to happen. That's just
Kirby,
my gut.
Kirby versus Saban, round 5.
I mean, it's going to be compelling television for a very, very small portion of the country, but for our part of the country, it will be compelling. But we'll see. I'm very curious in the ratings for this one. Very curious. Matt Green, thank you as always, my friend, and I will talk to you very soon.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.